I will have to say that one of my favorite lines of all time was indeed delivered by Peter Lorre. And that is, why do I have to waste my time outwitting morons? It's Justin Souther.
It's Ken Henge. That's awful. We should be.
It is. We probably. We, if we could do it, if we rehearsed it, but we haven't rehearsed it. So.
If we were. Who's on first?
Hi, he's Justin Souther, movie critic for the Mountain Express.
This is Ken Henge to my left.
They can't tell us you're.
Maybe
left.
It's in stereo. Can you?
Okay.
Mix that. Okay.
So. All right. Yeah, and I'm the other film critic for the Mountain Express.
Yes.
Yes. And we are...
Elitist Bastards.
We're Elitist Bastards.
We went to the movies.
Yep, we did. And here we are in the beautiful cinema lounge of the Carolina Asheville.
Off of Hendersonville Road.
Off Hendersonville Road, yes. And we're going to discuss...
these movies that we went to.
And movies that we're going to go see.
Yes. All kinds of movies.
Well, movies, yes. It's nonstop cornucopia of movies.
Yes. Well, we won't get to the big release of the week.
No, we won't get to the second. Let's start with the second, the unexpectedly popular release of the week.
Which is The Last Airbender, which is based on a cartoon called Avatar The Last Airbender, but another more popular Avatar.
I think they should have used the word Avatar. They might have gotten some more business.
Well, when you get your movie out after...
They might have thought it was a sequel, though.
Maybe they do.
And now that they painted 3D over it.
That's true. Well, this one is not as good as Avatar. And I don't even really like Avatar, so that's probably saying a good bit right there.
Yeah.
Though I will say...
You're not selling me.
No, it's... But it's not as horrific as the reviews might lead you to believe.
You mean it's not soul-crushing?
No, it's just boring. I mean, that can be soul-crushing, but it's not... I saw one review that compared it to Battlefield Earth, but it's not nearly as...
entertainingly bad?
No, it's not on the same level of god-awful.
We're not Ed Wood territory here.
No, it's just... A lot of it has to do with the director, M. Night Shyamalan, and how he has completely fallen out of favor with pretty much everyone on Earth, it seems.
And rightly so.
Yes.
But, you know,
but if anybody else made this dumb movie, it wouldn't be...
being quite as trounced.
Yeah.
Well, then the mistake all comes from the fact that years and years ago, like 1999, people mistook that film of his...
Yes. Sixth Sense.
Good.
Right.
Yes. And he's been having to live up to that misconception ever since.
And we both like Unbreakable, but I can't remember the last time I watched that movie, so I can't even really say if that movie's
Well, I think the last time I watched Unbreakable was when it was in the theater.
Right.
So
that might even be bad. We don't know.
Is it possible? I did like, unlike the rest of the human race, I liked Lady in the Water when I saw it in the theater.
I never decided what I thought of that movie. I could understand why...
But I'm afraid to watch it again because I'm afraid I'll find out I don't like it. And I'm perfectly happy being the sole champion of...
Well, I wouldn't say I like The Happening. I have a soft spot for it.
It's too dumb to hate.
Yeah, it's just this big, goofy, dumb movie. And that's almost in Ed Wood territory where it's kind of...
Yeah,
it's inept enough.
This is a movie where people outrun wind.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
It's worth it for the line... it's worth it for Mark Wahlberg saying "be scientific, douchebag."
Oh, there's that. Yeah, there's also that worthwhile safety lesson that you learn, and that is, if you're in a car, and the car stands a chance of crashing, do not sit behind John Leguizamo because he's so short you'll fly right over him through the windshield and get killed.
Yes, so.
Avoid this.
There's nothing quite.
Knowledge like this can save your life.
That's true.
Okay.
When was the last time you were in a car with John Leguizamo?
We won't talk about that.
Okay. It's your run-of-the-mill fantasy stuff. It's you have these magical people, and
what do they do exactly?
Well, they can bend elements. So you have earth benders and water benders. You have fire benders who are the bad guys. They're all about conquering everyone, and they're sort of like the. They use a lot of technology, and so you have.
Oh, they cheat.
They have this undercurrent of God versus science in the movie that never quite
goes anywhere.
No, there's like it's touched upon, but it's never.
Do they have weed benders?
No, they don't.
Oh.
But then you have the airbenders. All the airbenders have been killed because there's one person that can handle all the elements. This sort of the one chosen one. Yeah.
Not
real original.
One. Yeah, okay.
So, it's not Keanu Reeves, but this little bald-headed
boy. Is it Kyle MacLachlan?
No.
Okay.
And so, this kid has, when he was, this kid hasn't been around for 100 years, this messiah-type savior, whatever he's supposed
to
be.
The Kwisatz Haderach.
Yes.
Okay.
Because he ran away when he was a little kid and got frozen in the ocean. I'm not really sure how that happened. So he.
I've seen Return of the Ape Man. You fall into a glacier.
Right.
And then years and years later, somebody defrosts.
Well, he comes out in a big giant snowball thing with his. With his pet giant flying rodent that he flies around on.
You're making that up.
No, it's the giant. I don't know what it is.
You're just trying to bait me into going to see this.
I think you should, regardless. But. And you have this kid, and he's trying to save everyone, and it's just dull. There's nothing original about it. Dev Patel from
Slumdog.
Yes, is pretty much wasted. I'm pretty sure Shyamalan has no
By
idea how
I
to.
By that, I assume you mean he's ill-used. It's not that he's drunk.
No.
Okay.
He's given. I don't want. He's not very good in it, and I don't want to say it's. His fault completely because I've seen Mark Wahlberg be very good in movies and he's pretty awful in The Happening to a certain extent.
Well, in The
extent.
Happening, he comes across like a quarter wit.
Right. So I've come to the conclusion that Shyamalan has no idea how to direct actors. Or if he ever did, he's forgotten how. Because the whole movie's stilted.
I've kind of come to the conclusion that he has no clue of how to direct, but.
Well, that's the same here. Yeah. There's almost things that he touches on that. Oh, that almost good. Almost, but you just don't. Can't quite.
You can't really carve a career out of that unless you're Uwe Boll.
No, it's not. He's not Uwe Boll. Let's give Uwe Boll some credit. I did not see the Twilight Saga Eclipse.
Ah, yes.
Though you did.
I did, and I'm really kind of disappointed that you haven't, because...
I haven't had time. Yeah. I haven't had time to watch good stuff.
Oh, okay, well...
I still have Harry Brown and The Secrets in Their Eyes and to watch before I realize that Twilight is the cultural milestone of our...
It is, and you're going to be suffering from...
Yes.
You're gonna
watched part of
you're
it.
You're going to be ostracized.
I watched part of it, and I saw the werewolf boy shirtless...
That could be anything.
Yeah.
You know.
So I pretty much got the gist of the movie.
Yes. Well, that's... It's no better than the first two films.
Right.
But it's funnier.
Okay.
And I think that the difference is that it's got a director who knows this is crap.
Okay.
And he's not playing it like it might actually have merit. I don't know if some of... Now, there's some things in it that are obviously meant to be funny. I'm not clear on whether or not having Bella tell Werewolf Boy, stay, was intended to be funny, because only one person laughed besides me.
Well, it could have just...
Maybe Twilight fans.
Well, that may well be. Now, but at the point that Taylor Lautner tells Robert Pattinson that he's hotter than him, the audience did break into applause, which amused me on some level.
Well, that's really all the movies come down to.
It's shirtless werewolf boys.
Yeah.
Except they all want to run around naked in the woods with each other.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, when it comes right down to it, I mean, you stop and think about it.
Where do they get all the cutoff shorts? Do they ever explain that? Because they must have this constant, they must have like a barn full of cutoff jean shorts.
Well, I think they also, I want to know where they carry them. Or do they come home naked and then have to get dressed? And why do normal-sized human beings turn into wolves the size of Buicks?
Are you looking for logic in
this? I want an explanation.
Okay. Maybe there's some fan fiction you can read that explains this. You should Google it.
No, I don't think that's a good idea at all. No, no.
If there's any reader, or no, well, readers or listeners, but no.
Anyone,
please send an email.
Send me an email explaining to me why the werewolves are so big. And also explain to me why, if they want to cover her scent by werewolf track, they make Taylor Lautner carry her when he could have easily transformed into the Shetland pony-sized creature.
But I saw that.
And
that's the scene
ride.
I saw.
What?
They can't have a conversation. They can't
walk slowly through the woods and have a conversation. No, I've seen Marmaduke. There's no reason they couldn't.
This is different universes, Ken. Somebody explain that to Ken.
I think a talking werewolf would be just fine. But no, it's
not.
But
not in this movie. No talking werewolves. It's too far-fetched. Nobody will believe it.
But we have vampires that sparkle in the daylight.
She get pregnant in this one or is that the next one?
No, she's not pregnant. She's she's still a big deal is made of this virgin.
Okay.
Which means, of course, that she's in danger from Udo Kier.
Right.
That's a, you know.
Maybe he'll show up in the next one.
Oh, I could only hope. But, I mean, really, of course, when it comes right down to it, you start looking at it, and the whole thing, it seems like it's an extended abstinence-only ad.
Right.
But, of course, you look at it further, and here you've got this.
Well, the whole thing's like
totally bland high school girl whose life revolves around trying to decide between bestiality and necrophilia.
Well, that's very strange. Well, like you said, it's just one big abstinence only ad, yet. The whole thing is playing on hormones.
Yeah, well, that's...
I mean, not only the film, but...
They're playing on the audience.
Yeah.
Yes, their target group.
Right.
So, I mean, I don't know. It's just... I'm waiting for the one where he gives her a C-section with his teeth. That's right. I'm there for that. Okay. I want to see that.
It'll be a disappointment. I don't know.
It's just bound to be a disappointment, but...
Maybe that's Bill Condon's gut.
I don't even want to talk about that.
Maybe he's like, I could do something with this.
Bill's delusional, if that's the case.
This is going to be 30 minutes of him ripping babies out of his throat. Let's hope.
Moving right along. Right. We've had enough of Twinklight.
Well, there's two movies left, so. Is it just two?
Yeah, there's just two left. Okay. Two that have been seen. And I don't believe you've actually seen either of them, although you've seen part of one of them.
What? The Twilights?
Oh, no. I thought you meant on the what we were talking about today.
No.
I believe there's only two left, although they might get all Harry Potter and split the last one into two.
I thought that's what they were doing. I don't know. It's depressing to think about.
No. I guess they are. They have to if there's two movies left.
Yeah.
No.
So,
I was a mad fool. I can't keep my trashy young adult fiction straight. You know, just because I give them this, at least they're books, I guess.
They have words. They have letters arranged in words
and sentences. They may even say chapter one or something in there.
and much more promising news. There's the new Junet film.
Much more promising is Jean-Pierre Junet's Micmacs, which turns out really is a word, or at least it's French slang. I'm not sure if it's a real word or not. We would have to ask the expert on that, my editor, who is unfortunately nowhere to be seen. So we can't ask her. But Micmacs is apparently French in some fashion for mix-ups or funny business. And this film is hands down and without a question, in my mind, the best thing I have seen all summer. And it's a contender for one of the best things I've seen in the entire year. It is endlessly creative, it is funny, it's clever, it's actually somewhat touching, it has something on its mind, and you're not going to find anything that is more interestingly photographed than this film. Its basic plot, and describing a Junet plot is, we could be here all night if I tried to detail anything other than the essentials, which is you have this kid whose father is killed by a landmine, which gets him sent to an orphanage. When he comes out of the orphanage, he gets a low-rent job working at a video store where he watches old Hollywood classics, which he's apparently memorized the dialogue to because he is reciting, or at least moving his lips along with Bogart and Lauren Bacall in a dubbed print of The Big Sleep. When, unfortunately, there is gang violence in the street and someone is shooting, and the person on the motorcycle drops his gun, and in a really freak accident, the gun goes off and shoots him in the head. So he ends up in the hospital. And the doctor decides, on a coin toss no less, that even though the bullet could kill him at any moment, it's too risky to operate, so they're going to leave it in. So he goes home, finds out he has no place to live, and all of his stuff has been stolen. He goes back to the video store and finds out that a pretty girl has taken his place, although she very kindly presents him with the bullet casing for the bullet that's in his head, which that, however, is part of the plot, because it's also, I should note that he has, as a child, magnified a photo of a piece of the landmine, so he's seen the maker's mark on that, and now he's seen the maker's mark on the bullet. And after a little while, as basically trying to beg and be a street performer, he gets hooked up with this group of misfits who live in this fantasticated world made out of scrap in a junkyard. And one day, while helping collect junk, stuff falls off the truck, and he goes to pick it up, and reflected in a puddle, he sees the edifice for one of the two munition makers. And when he looks at it, he then looks across the street and sees that the maker of the landmine is on one side of the street and the maker of the bullet is on the other side of the street, and they are competitors. So he decides to get his revenge on the people who have more or less inadvertently ruined his life. This is the plot. I won't go into it any further than that. Except to say, it's pretty much nonstop delightful. And
I saw the first 15 minutes of it, and it was...
And how was the first 15 minutes?
I liked it, and then the screener you gave me froze.
Worked fine for me. I watched it three times.
Yes. Well,
that should give you some indication of how I feel about this film. I watched it three
times. I watched the first 15 minutes once. I could have watched it more than once, I guess.
I suppose you could have tried anyway, so I think I'm going to have to see it on the big screen because it just, you know, even on a, you know, nice TV set, it's just not the same thing.
So, Human Centipede.
Yes. What about it?
Well, is it as disgusting as it's supposed to be?
The concept is certainly disgusting.
I assume the idea of it.
The idea of it is disgusting. Those people moving those bar stools around are annoying. But that's another story altogether. Anyway.
Which would you rather them? Would you rather be part of a human centipede or have them moving
they
bar
can
stools
move
around?
Bar stools around.
Okay.
For anyone who doesn't know, this is a film from Holland by a gentleman whose name is apparently Tom Six, and I don't know Dutch well enough to know whether or not that's possibly on his birth certificate. I suppose it could be. It has no rating, and it's about a mad scientist who used to specialize in separating Siamese twins, but who now has become obsessed with creating a Siamese triplet. He's done this apparently once before with Rottweilers, which must not have been a raging success because there's a grave in the yard labeled My Sweet Three Dog.
You should also point out that they're just not conjoined. They're certain areas of their...
Well, yes, I'm getting to okay. that. So the way he's going to hook them together is he removes part of their jaw and sews their lips to the anus of the person in front of them, making one long digestive tract.
Do they ever say why he wants to do this?
No.
He's just mad?
He doesn't like people very much.
Okay.
In fact, he says he hates human beings. That perhaps is the entire rationale behind this. And yes, the idea is disgusting. It's not presented particularly graphically, and it comes loaded with a central problem. Once you get past the idea, once you create the human centipede, you've got this thing that kind of wanders around on all floors, on all fours. What can it do other than sort of shamble around? Well, that's what it can do.
Take it to a cocktail party.
Well, I suppose that's true. That would be a good conversation piece, but yes. I'm not sure how you explain where you got it.
Well, I assume he's got other mad scientist friends, right?
We never see anybody.
They have a club?
This has a very limited cast.
Okay.
I mean, it's got, you know, the two bimbos, the Japanese guy that he kidnaps, him,
cops,
a truck driver that he kidnaps and rejects as unsuitable, so he has him put to sleep, two policemen, and a pervert. And I think we have now covered all the people that we see in the cast. I suppose you might want to know how you determine one pervert from another, but this is a pervert in a car early on. So you're 30 minutes into the movie and you've got this creation and nowhere to go with it. So until it gets to a point in the, we'll call it the last act, that things get out of control, it does have a nice, splattery, over-the-top, gory ending. But there's a lot of... It's not exactly dead space because the guy playing the mad scientist who looks like what would happen if you crossed Udo Kier with Christopher Walken and had him dress up like Dr. No is so marvelously bad that he's entertaining by himself because everything is on this one high-pitched note of hysteria. There is never... When they said mad scientist, he took it literally. I mean, he's always mad. And he's irritable, too.
Well, it's hard work.
It's hard work. Yes, it is. I'm sure it is.
Digestive tracts.
I would think so. But I know an awful lot of people who won't sit through it. I know an awful lot of people who are afraid to sit through it. And it really, and the movie works on the basis of a dare. They are daring you to sit through this movie.
Right. It's the two girls, one cup of horror
of horror films.
Have you seen the Human Centipede cat toy?
No.
That somebody has made.
No, I have not. Little,
I'll show it to you. They also have a video game much like Centipede, but it's Human Centipede. So it's just got these little people running around.
You know, I could see I could see a cootie set that works on this basis. And I'd be really happy to give that to a toddler.
Well, I'm surprised it hasn't been made yet.
It probably will be, now that I've said it, I'm going to lose all profits that might have accrued.
It is a bit of a minor pop culture phenomenon.
It is a pop culture phenomenon, and I suppose on that basis, if you think you can stand it...
Even better if you don't think you can stand it.
If you don't think you can stand it, see it.
At the risk of... I don't know who listens to this podcast, if anybody does. I was talking to somebody the other day who was talking about he has a friend who is afraid of bugs.
Yes.
And they saw the poster for Human Centipede. And he's like, oh, I don't want to see that because he thought it had bugs in it. And
yeah.
His friend was like, no, you're going to go watch this. So he's going to bring his friend to watch it. His friend's going to be waiting for
bugs.
And then get the curveball of the Human Centipede. So the mirror...
I suppose you know what show they're going
to.
No,
I do not.
Darn, I would kind of like to go see this.
So.
The thing about it is that it would be... I watched it at home alone on a screener, and I think it would be really entertaining with an audience. Whether it's an audience like the ones here who, on the Thursday Night Horror Picture Show, they have watched the trailer both weeks, the last couple weeks, and they laugh at it in that kind of like, this is the stupidest thing I've ever seen way. I think that would be a good audience to watch it with, and I think an audience that was utterly grossed out,
right,
as long as they weren't actually vomiting on me, would be worth watching it with. But, you know, seeing it at home didn't have quite the same effect that I think
so.
A group would. And the funny thing is it starts out like it's self-aware. It has an opening that is very much like Rocky Horror, right down to the point that when they get the flat, she kicks the tire before they walk off to the mad scientist's house. He leaves them standing in the rain, like Brad and Janet, while he talks to them at the doorway. He never says, you're wet. But it's pretty much the same basic setup. Unfortunately, once he gets them in the house, it loses whatever intentional sense of humor it has, I think. I don't know the director. He may think this whole thing is a laugh riot. So, anyway... Watch at your peril, and don't come whining to me when you tell me this movie made you sick.
This week's Thursday Horror Picture Show is
The Abominable Dr. Fives.
Yes, starring Vincent Price.
And Joseph Cotten.
Yes.
And it's... more a twisted comedy than a flat-out horror film. It's essentially what you have is you have Price as Dr. Anton Fibes revenging himself on the 9 doctors that he blames for his wife's death. Now, in the meantime, he's also had a car crash and is supposedly dead, but in fact is actually just incredibly disfigured. Which means he wears a mask during most of the film, which leads to an unmasking scene and all this, which would be great, except the poster shows him without the mask, so it kind of kills the whole point. It's done very much like an Avengers episode. And by that I mean you've got 2 detectives, think of them as Steed and Mrs. Peel, and they encounter various eccentric people during the course of investigating it. It pretty much works on the same basis, which isn't a big surprise when you consider the man who directed the film, Robert Fuest, had already directed, and it started out, in fact, by directing either 6 or 8, I forget which, Avengers episodes. So it was kind of ingrained in the man. It's a lot of fun. It's kind of grisly without being gory. It was, at the time, I think it was rated GP, which turned into PG, which would now, it's been re-released once, so it was now rated PG-13, so it's not over-the-top grisly. So anybody who was, you know, frightened to go hide under the bed by last week's showing of Blood for Dracula can come out now and come see Uncle Vinny at his murderous best in one of his most famous roles, one of the few roles that generated a sequel film, Dr. Fibes Rises Again. And if we get a good response on that one, maybe we'll bring him back for Dr. Fibes Rises Again.
And then we have our normal Tuesday screening.
Next week.
Yes.
Which is Tarsem Singh's The Fall.
Who he directed The Cell.
The Cell, yes. This is a film people have been trying to get me to watch for, at least 2 years. And somehow or other, I had never gotten around to it until we scheduled this screening, which is part of the reason that it was scheduled, is so that it would make me watch this film, I think. I think that is the reason that one of our members suggested it.
And people would stop telling you to
watch
it.
And people will stop telling me to watch this. And I almost don't feel qualified to talk about it because I've only watched it one time, and it definitely is a more than one-time movie. I don't think I have caught even a glimmer of all the undercurrents of this film. Visually, it's stunning. It's amazingly entertaining. My review, I gave it 4.5 out of 5, and I'll bet after a second viewing I'm going to be sorry I didn't give it a 5. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this on a big screen, and I'm really looking forward to seeing this with an audience next week. So if you can make it, be there. Plus, folks, it's got simian value. It's opening this week.
Yes.
Other than the Micmacs and
right.
And Human Centipede.
Which, yeah. Human Centipede, we should point out, is only Thursday, yes. Friday, and Saturday. There's only 2 evening shows,
yes.
Each night.
But also opening this week, in addition to those 2 films, mm-hmm. Both of those, by the way, are exclusive to the Carolina,
right.
Is Winter's Bone, the highly acclaimed indie film, which is opening exclusively at the Fine Arts.
Which it won Sundance?
Yes, it won 2 prizes at Sundance, okay. And they weren't those, you know, we're going to give everybody a prize, yeah. Prizes. It was like the big prizes. I haven't seen it. I guess I'll see it on Friday. But I know there are a lot of people that are looking forward to it, so hopefully it will live up to its 94% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes. We'll find out. And in your mainstream releases, you have the animated Despicable Me with Steve Carell, and I guess the bad guy is voiced by, what's the guy's name?
Jason Segel?
No, he's not the bad guy. I think the bad guy is voiced by Russell Brand.
Maybe.
That's the other one with an evil scientist sounding name.
Okay.
The whole thing is this movie has had a whole different set of trailers on at least 3 occasions, and they all seem to be advertising a different movie. But the early word on it is that it's actually really good. And here we have a 3D film that was actually designed and made with 3D in mind. We don't have something like The Last Weedbender where they have slapped 3D onto an existing film. So if you like your 3D, this is a consideration. However, because Toy Story 3 is still in theaters and because The Last Airbender is still in theaters, there's a scarcity of 3D screens, so a lot of places are going to show this in 2D. Myself, I'm good with that because I've had enough 3D for, a considerable period of time. And what else is opening?
Predators, which
yes.
is by Nimrod Antal.
Yes. Nimrod Atoll. Yes. Antal.
But I think what's more, it's not so much a... It's Robert Rodriguez produced.
Yes. It's got a good cast.
Yes, apparently he wrote a script for this film back in 1994. He wrote some sort of Predator script.
Right.
That they asked him to. It never got made. He was never even thought to be directing it, so he just sort of threw a bunch of stuff in there since he didn't have to worry about the budget. And then years later, they dug up his script, decided that he should have something to do with making another Predator film, and...
Although this doesn't use his script, I'm pretty sure, because...
But I'm curious to see.
Well, his script, I think, is actually was intended more as a sequel to the Schwarzenegger film, and Schwarzenegger's character would have been in it.
Right. But I was reading an interview with Rodriguez where he was talking about how this still sort of goes after the first film, so I don't know. It's hard to tell how... The fact that Danny Trejo's in this makes me wonder how much Rodriguez has his hands in this.
Well, so, you know...
Which is going to make, I think, the biggest difference.
The biggest difference. Yeah. And Danny Trejo classes up anything.
Yes.
So... I'm officially curious.
I'm curious. It could, and Adrian Brody has been having a good streak of not picking
crummy movies. Yeah.
So
we'll see.
I guess we'll find out, or I will.
You will. If it's good, I'll see it. You'll have to clue me in since you handle all things Rodriguez, and that leaves me stuck with Despicable Me.
Oh, well. You'll get over it.
I'll live through it.
Yes.
I lived through Twilight.
And for yet another week, I'm Justin Saller.
Next week you'll be somebody else.
Let's hope so.
And I'm Ken Hankey, and intend on being Ken Hankey next week, although we might switch characters and see if anybody notices. And we are Elitist Bastards.
Yes.
And we've been to the movies.
Mm-hmm. We will... be at the movies again.
Yes, and here we are at the end of our podcast, which is brought to you by the Mountain Express, and which is engineered, produced, cohered, and several other things.
Spit shined.
Yes.
By Steve Schanefelt.
Steve Schanefelt, the Mr. Mucilage himself, who holds everything together.
The wind beneath our wings.
The wind, that's right, yes.